Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brain to get past the excellence of execution?
Does they think they got the answers? I change the questions.
This is Jim Cornette, and the views that I'm about to express are not necessarily those of anybody else but me, but they ought to be, and as a matter of fact, they probably are.
The reason why Ax and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine is in government issue.
Yellow. Everybody, Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. And this week, I've got my guest, Joel Deaton, formerly half of the Deaton Brothers, the Wild Bunch, and he also donned a mask to portray Thunderfoot. That interview's coming up in just a bit. But before we get there, I want to talk. I recently got to watch the new documentary, Sabu, which, of course, is about Sabu, and it's particularly got a lot of emphasis on the build-up for his last match against Joey Janela. The documentary comes from Joe Clark, who directed it, and was produced by Rob Van Dam. It's a great look at Sabu's background, and it really gives a lot of insight into his drive that he had for his performance, because you see that very heavily in his motives or his passion for his last match and what he wanted to end with. There are very emotional parts also in it. He talks about, you know, the passing of Melissa Coates, the parts with Sabu and RVD together, showing how close they were as friends. It was all very, very, very emotional. Of course, at the end, there's a lot of emotion when discussing his passing, which occurred just a few weeks after that final match. But everyone out there knows that I love ECW, and I've always been a fan of Sabu. So I really recommend everyone go get a copy. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it from Vinegar Syndrome. But again, it is called Sabu, a documentary about Sabu. It is, look up, make sure it's the right one. I don't know if there's other things out there that might have that title, but make sure, you know, it's, again, directed by Joe Clark, produced by Rob Van Dam. Thank you to Joe for sending that over for me to watch. Absolutely great. Everybody go and order a copy. Highly recommended. I'm going to order me a copy to add to my Blu-ray collection very, very soon. So, okay then, let's take a break. And when I come back, we'll have my interview with Joel Deaton.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by a man that was half of the Deaton Brothers and half of the Wild Bunch, and he also loaded the boot as Thunderfoot. He is Outlaw Joel Deaton. Sir, how are you?
I'm fine, man. Dave, doing fine as I can.
that's all we can do, day by day. Joel, let's talk. You were discovered by Lars Anderson, right? Tell us about that.
Well, I had left college from Ole Miss. I had a scholarship and had a girlfriend that had gotten pregnant and was fixing to have her baby, and I couldn't stay in school and support a family. So I left school and went to Atlanta, and I was working in a health spa, kind of a personal trainer, European health spa is what it was called. And that was back in 77. And Lars come in there one day, and I didn't know who he was, and we just got to talking, and he told me he, you know, who he was, and said he had a building right there not far from where I was at Smyrna, Georgia, and he was training guys to be professional wrestlers, and asked me would I be interested, and I said, yeah, I would be interested, because I'd always been an athlete my whole life, and I was never a big wrestling fan at that point, but I had seen it, you know, on TBS and when I was younger, and so anyway, I went over there to the building he was talking about at the time, he said, and he had a ring set up in the building, and that was the day that I met David Deaton, or Hoss Deaton, as I called him.
We kind of
came there at the same time.
Yeah, and obviously, right, that's someone you became synonymous with. Lars was training Dave. And so where did, through the training and stuff, where did the idea come up for you to become a Deaton and to team with David?
Well, Deaton was his real last name.
Yeah.
And my biological father, my born last name is Silas. But my mom and my real father divorced when I was 1 year old. My sister was three, and she remarried when I was nine, and to a man that had the last name Jones.
Uh-huh.
And so he adopted me and my sister, and they changed their name to Jones. I just decided we were, you know, Lars was training us kind of to be heels.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that Deaton sounded a little more heelish than Jones. So I just said, our first names were the Bruno brothers.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. You wrestled as the Bruno brothers. So where did that name come from?
It just popped in my head one day, and I just said, you know, after Lars put us together, I just said, well, what about the Bruno brothers? And we agreed on it, so that's what we went with. And then later on, we went to the Deaton brothers.
Yeah, did you also, briefly in Southwest, did you also, guys also wrestle as the New Anderson brothers?
Yes, we were for Wahoo out in San Antonio, Southwest Texas Championship Wrestling. Joe Blanchard was a promoter.
Yeah.
And Wahoo, we were in Atlanta doing Atlanta TV one morning, and Wahoo was there, and he watched. Apparently he watched one of our matches. You know, we did a job that day for we wrestled Buzz Sawyer and Ricky Fields. But anyway, Wahoo liked what he saw, and he was just fixing to go out to San Antonio and take the book over, and so he asked us, you know, did we want to come out there? And we said, sure, yeah. And the Wahoo pulled us out there, and that's where we stayed for first 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah, so did Wahoo name you the New Anderson brothers? I mean, I'm assuming he worked with Lars, talked to Lars, and that's how it came about.
He knew that Lars trained us.
Yeah.
So he gave us that name, the New Anderson brothers.
Yeah. Well, like you said, right, you were working in the Southwest. You worked in some in Florida, Georgia. You were obviously getting more attention working for these are the prominent territories of the day. So when you're in Georgia, Tell us, you're working for Ole Anderson. Tell us an Ole Anderson story.
Well, Ole, you know, we had worked with Lars there for, I don't know, but around a year, and we had went on some, you know, way down in the islands down there in Antigua and West Indies and Trinidad, Barbados, and all down there. And he was running some little small shows around. But we wasn't really making a lot of, you know, money at the time. Making a little bit, but not, you know, Lars was just a small promotion, but World League Wrestling. And so we just decided one day to call Ole and see if he'd give us a shot over there. And he said, yeah, you know, you come on, it'd be such a date, and on Saturday morning. And so that's how we, you know, we didn't really, I mean, Ole didn't come in and introduce himself or nothing. We, you know, we knew who he was, knew what he looked like.
Sure.
Stuff, but
yeah.
First time I saw him, he came in and he was bleeding where he had bladed in a match the night before or whatever. And he had a match before us. And so when he came in, he was, you know, his head was bleeding. I was like, damn, you know, what the hell? You know, I didn't know what to think. And he never said nothing to us. He never talked to us or anything. The only one that really, I mean, we, you know, I met Ivan Koloff and the Mass, Bill Eady.
Yeah, superstar. Yeah.
And a few other vets, you know, in the dressing room that day. And that was when Wahoo, after getting close to the end of TV, he, you know, he invited us out there to San Antonio. But
yeah,
but I don't really have a lot of oldest stories. Just he came up for Crockett for a while when I was there, and you know, we never really talked a whole lot, but you know, Ole kind of stayed to himself, No, so I don't really have any good stories to tell him.
Well, that's all right. You talked about working for Jim Crockett, and you went there around 1984. So how did that come about that you end up going to Crockett in the Mid-Atlantic? Was there a connection there that got you in, or how did that happen?
Well, after we left out there in Southwest, left out there in Wahoo, we went to Puerto Rico for a little while, wrestled over there for a promoter called Centron. It was in opposition
Carlos Colon.
Yeah, Colon.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we left Puerto, we stayed over there about 8 months. We left there, we went to the Florida Championship Wrestling for Dory Funk.
Yeah.
And we worked in there with Dory for about 6-7 months. And Dory was fixing to go somewhere else. He was leaving the book. And I can't remember who was going to come in and book behind him. But anyway, he was leaving. So he, you know, told us he was trying to help us get somewhere else, and he got us booked in Tulsa for Leroy McGuirk.
Okay.
The Tri-State wrestling
there. Yeah.
And Skandor Akbar was our manager, and we stayed up there for about a year. And
yeah,
we left there. We went to down to the Carolinas and talked to Dusty, and he said, you know, yeah, we could come in down there. So we went in there as a tag team, as the Deaton brothers, and David, you know, David was a 300-pounder, and he was a state champion amateur wrestler in Georgia, and he was a pretty tough guy.
Yeah.
And he didn't couldn't understand the business enough to where, you know, he didn't feel like he didn't like doing jobs for guys that he could whoop, you know.
Yeah.
And so when we first went in there with Dusty, you know, we did a few jobs, and
yeah,
David just got disgusted with it and quit the territory, and I stayed.
Yeah.
And that was in '83.
Yeah. So not long after then, that's when you became Thunderfoot.
And well, yeah. I fractured my ankle in Hendersonville, North Carolina, working with Argentina Apollo, so I was out for about 6 months or so. And another Wahoo, when I rode to the town with him, it was Hendersonville, North Carolina. So he helped me to the car and went to the store, bought a whole bag of ice and taped it on my ankle. And then we was driving back to Charlotte, and he gave me a couple pills. I didn't know what anything about pills then. Yeah. And stuff.
Yeah.
And so by the time we got to Charlotte, he took me to the hospital. You know, my ankle was about frostbite from having a bag of ice on it for about 3 hours, but it was funny. I mean, And so I had to go. You know, I couldn't work because I was hurt, and so I left and went and got healed up and worked for a railroad company for a while and then I called back up there and they said, come on. And I went back up there in '84 sometime. Mm-hmm. And in '85, we used to have these team meetings, as Dusty would call them, about once every month or so. And he got all the boys, he'd call them in there in the office and stuff, and talk about things. So he called me in there by myself one day when JJ was there. And he said that he was impressed with my work and I had worked hard, and he wanted to promote from within. Instead of bringing somebody in, he wanted to give me a little push. And
sure.
So he suggested he told me about the old Infernos.
Uh-huh.
And how they had a loaded boot, and how they'd load the boot and kick people and beat them. And
yep.
And so I had no idea who the damn Infernos were. and so. But I went ahead and got the outfits and stuff and built my boot up and he gave me JJ as the
manager. Yeah.
And that was right before Buddy Landell came in
right.
And so JJ stayed with me for about 4 or 5 months, and I was getting some wins on TV and house shows and stuff, and then they brought Buddy in, and Dusty put JJ with Buddy, and a little while after that he wanted give me a partner, and so that's when they let Gene Ligon be Thunderfoot too.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Yeah, but going back, so I was going to ask, but yeah, it sounds like a Dusty ideal, the whole Thunderfoot thing, which you said it was. That sounds like a Dusty ideal. Well, what did you think of working under a mask? Did you have any difficulty switching over to working under a hood?
Well, I never liked it.
Yeah.
I never liked working under a hood. For some reason, I had never worked under a hood or anything, but I mean, tried to change, you know, with that built up boot and everything, I tried to change my style a little bit, but I just never liked it, you know, yeah. but I did it, you know, cause I was getting that little push and I was making a little more money and,
yeah.
And so I went with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they put you with JJ, like you said, right? You had a little run. Then they pulled JJ to put him with Buddy, brought in Gene Ligon, put you guys in as a tag team. And you had a decent little run as a tag team, right? You held the Central States tag titles. You had, okay, but did you, the Thunderfoot gimmick, did you like working it as a singles or a tag team, or did it really matter to you? You had tag team experience, obviously. Did you have a preference?
Well, I liked, but it didn't really matter. I mean, I liked either one, either way, single or tag. You know, as long as my tag partner was, you know, Gene was a little green.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He with the more experience he worked hard and he tried his best. And then when, you know, when Dusty sent us all out to Kansas City out there,
mm-hmm.
You know, me and Gene, he put those belts on us out there. But yeah, I like working tag. Okay. And
well, tell us about Kansas City, because you hear a lot of people talk about how Kansas City was a rough territory to work. Did you have any difficulty out there? It doesn't have a good reputation.
Well, I mean, they didn't try to draw no money out there.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the trips were long.
Yeah.
700 miles, 800 one way. And it was just the trips were just, they were just, too hard.
Sure.
And the money wasn't good because every now and then Dusty would come in, they'd run a big show and we'd make a little money. But for the most part, you know, we wasn't making much more than $100 a night. And you know, they just left us out there to starve. I mean, there was a lot of us out there, Baby Dolls, Sam mm-hmm. Houston, I think Todd Champion, well, he was green, but he was out there, and Dave Peterson, mm. who passed away, and there were some others that come in there, and Pee Wee, the referee, he
mm-hmm.
he was out there, and there's a couple more, Rocky King, and a few more yeah. underneath guys were out there, but you know, we tried our best, but they never, I don't think that Bob Geigel and Bob Brown, I don't really think they, like I said, they didn't really try to draw any money in.
Yeah.
You know, but we were working every night, so we just, it's just mostly stayed on the road.
Yeah. Well, and tell us, you had a car accident that sidelined you for a while, right? What happened there?
A car accident where?
Well, it says they had that you had a car accident that sidelined you for a bit. Is that true?
Well, yeah. We were working in Greenville, South Carolina for Crockett.
All right. And this did and, now is this when what did you came back? Is this were you and David teaming again?
No, he had already left.
Okay.
And I was, we were working in Greenville, South Carolina on Christmas Day.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was Thunderfoot and I, you know, finished my match. And so I went out, you know, when I got in the car, I left my mask on because people all out there and stuff and fans. And so I just got in my car and drove out the parking lot and I remember taking a left and going to a red light, real not 100 yards away, and I stopped, and then I turned left to go back, get back on the interstate, and there was a red light, but it was green, you know, when I went through it, and a car passed in front of him, and I saw it was a Volkswagen, and I hit it, you know, right in the side.
Yeah.
In a long door.
Yeah.
And the Volkswagen just spun around. I wasn't going real fast, maybe 35, 40. But anyway, we hit pretty hard, and it spun that Volkswagen around. And I, you know, my car was all messed up. And some of the other boys were leaving the building, and they stopped, and Chris Champion and the New Breed. The other guy's name. But anyway,
yeah,
they gave me a ride back to Charlotte, and the girl that was driving the car that I hit, you know, it killed her.
Mm. Wow.
I don't know if she died right then or at the hospital, but
yeah.
When I got back to Charlotte, I called down there to the hospital to check on somebody that had been in an accident, and that's when they told me that she didn't make it. And
yeah,
you know, that was just terrible.
And, sure, yeah.
But I was taking off my mask, and so maybe I could have reacted a little quicker if I hadn't been doing that. You know, yeah. It kind of took my eyes off things for a second. And, you know, so it was a really bad, bad thing. And I, you know, I still think about it. But, But anyway,
Well, I mean, you end up after that, you had some successful runs. For Jerry Blackwell and Southern Championship Wrestling, for, you know, Nelson Royal and Atlantic Coast Wrestling, the Global Wrestling. These are some prominent, the first of the big prominent, like, indie type groups that were guys were coming up trying to fill some holes, in that, you know, promoting thing. So what did you think of this period where you're working for these groups, guys you knew, right? Guys you'd worked with.
You were
having a pretty good run.
Yeah, they by that time I had pretty much became a polished pro, and you know, and I was pretty good on the microphone, and I enjoyed working for Jerry, and I enjoyed out there with Global for a Pedicino, and
you know
we didn't stay out there long. But then me and Billy, we stopped in there, coming back from Japan, and did some TVs there. But we didn't stay there because they wasn't running house shows; they were just doing TVs, and then it was coming on ESPN.
Yeah, and you're talking about Billy Black, obviously, who was probably your most successful tag run was with Billy as the Wild Bunch. Like you said, you started it in Global and everything else. Did you know Billy Black before that? Did you meet in Global? How did you two come to meet and form a tag team?
Well, I went to an independent show down here in Georgia. I can't remember what town it was, but. And Billy was working on that show. He was doing moonsaults and some other things that impressed me. And so, you know, I said, damn. I said, I might, you know, take him to Japan. Because, you know, when I was in Japan, me and Dickie Slater was partners for a couple of years before me and Billy.
Yeah, right.
And anyway, I'd asked Billy, would he want to go on tour to Japan? He said, yeah. And so I called up the office over there, and Baba booked him on the next tour. And so me and him went over there, and we started our run over there.
Yeah, and you had, I mean, a really good run in Japan, right? I mean, you had already been over there, like you said. But yeah, you and Billy had a great run in Japan. And then in 1992, you guys really very briefly worked in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. What did you think of working for Jim Cornette? And how come that run didn't last any longer?
Well, Jim, you know, I knew Jim from Charlotte. I was there with him for 4 or 5 years there in Charlotte with him, you know, managing Midnight Express and stuff. And
yeah.
And Jim, you know, he did us good. But we did several house shows and a few TVs for Jim, and he paid us okay. And you know, so we stayed in there for a little while, and then we started going up a little bit north of where I think he was doing TVs in Nashville, I think, or not Nashville, but
Knoxville, I think. Yeah.
Knoxville. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Billy, I don't know, man, Billy had some mental problems, but anyway, he didn't like snow, and he didn't like driving snow. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I said, Billy, they're doing us good here. You know, we making a little money. I said, but he left and went back down here to Georgia somewhere. And so he, you know, he messed his own self up there.
Okay. So the run didn't last because Billy Black didn't want to deal with snow.
No, not after, after we left Smoky Mountain, we might have tagged up a couple more times, but we pretty much broke up.
Yeah, I mean, was that kind of a trigger to it? I mean, obviously that had to frustrate you, right? I mean, working Smoky Mountain, you said you had a pretty good deal going. He comes up with something like that. I mean, it's got to be frustrating, right? You're not being able to make the bookings because of that.
Yeah, well, Billy didn't. He didn't understand the business, the politics of the business.
Sure.
And because he had never worked in a, you know, in a real territory.
And, yeah, right.
And had a chance to, you know, to learn from, you know, just being in a established territory. He worked some independents here and there, but, you know, the first real territory he worked was when I took him over there to Japan. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was the best place in the world to learn and improve. And, so me and Billy, we did, he just, like I said, he had some mental issues I tried. I liked Billy, but we kind of grew apart and so, you know, that was that. We were doing good in Japan. Baba was, you know, doing us good. But like I said, there was most of the times when we would work, if we were doing the job, Billy would be the one to get pinned, and he didn't like that. But that was the way Baba did things.
Sure.
You know, like if somebody else brought somebody in, you know, to be their partner, you know, they would be the ones that go. But in Japan, doing jobs didn't matter.
Sure, right.
You know, it's all on what you did in the ring and the reaction and the people. Sometimes you'd get more respect losing than you know, they didn't care about winning or losing. They just wanted to see, you know, some fur flying.
Yeah. But like you said, Billy had trouble understanding that, right? He didn't quite grasp how the politics of wrestling worked and how the business worked. So after that Smoky Mountain run, when you and Billy split, I mean, was that kind of it for you? Did you, I mean, I'm sure you made a few shots here and there, but did you kind of decide after that to kind of hang it up?
Well, I went back to Japan a few times, and I did some independence. Let me think. What did I do? I think my last. Well, I went back. I think when I stopped going, when I was stopped going, regular, I was getting 16 weeks a year over there, so. I was making decent money, and then 95, I think, was my last tour or no, I went back again for Tenryu for the SWS over there. I worked with shows for Tenryu over there. We had one big show in the Sumo Palace and some other shows for him. He was one of my best friends over there. And then I went back over there in 2019 for the 20th anniversary of Giant Baba's death and a big show they had in I think they had that at no, it wasn't the Budokan. I think they had that at the sumo arena.
Yeah.
Sumo Palace, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And
Yeah.
me and Abdullah went over there. We were the only Americans over there besides Stan
Uh-huh.
that got booked on that big show. And
Yeah, well, since you stopped working, take a book, do you watch any current wrestling at all?
I might watch a little of it, but I don't. It's not what I did. It's not the same. I don't particularly like the product now.
Yeah, I find that a lot with a lot of you guys that are veterans, from the day. You have trouble relating to the current product and seeing. I mean, it's I don't know, it's weird. It's mostly talk now, it feels like. Very little actually in-ring stuff. And everything's different, right? It's just
Yeah, it's just not the same, and I just I don't know. I did it so long, in the old style, and starting in 77 and going through, I had close to 7,000 matches, and I had over 500 matches in Japan.
Yeah.
And
Well, I mean, I imagine it'd be hard for you to detach and watch it as a fan, right? Because as you're watching it, it's hard for you probably to shut your brain off and just critiquing what they're doing, right? I mean, it's got to be hard. You can't help but see some of those flaws, right?
Oh yeah, they do all them flips and all that high spots and like I mean some of them are okay and they're good athletes to be able to do that kind of stuff, but it's just not it just wasn't wrestling to me. It wasn't what
Yeah,
I
it's.
what I
I agree.
loved and what I did
Yeah.
And so I really seriously I really don't even watch it. I mean I probably have watched one or two shows in the last 4 or 5 years on TV.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. As a fan, that's the same with me. It's like I try to watch everyone now and then. I'm like, I can't. It's just not. Whatever, good, bad, or whatever, it doesn't appeal to me, right? It's not what hooked me to begin with. So I just don't bother. And so do you ever get out making the appearances, do any conventions, signings, things like that?
Well, last one I did was in Charlotte in 2019, and that was in August. And And then that following October is when I had a stroke.
Oh, yeah.
You knew that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did, Joel.
Yeah, I had a massive stroke, and it paralyzed the left side of my body.
Yeah.
And my left leg, it woke up a little bit, and I couldn't move it and use it and all. And then, but it paralyzed my left arm, and I can walk, but I have to have my cane and the knee brace on, and I have to be real careful because my balance is bad.
Sure. And obviously that makes traveling pretty difficult, right? I mean, it's hard to travel.
Yeah, it's I got invited to come up and do. I've been invited to a bunch of some in New York and one down in Florida, and you know, it's just too much.
Yeah.
You know, with me and the condition I'm in, you know, I wanted to go to that last one in Charlotte. I was invited, and you know, they were gonna pay me decent, and they were gonna pay me decent. And the one down in Tampa, I think they did the last.
Yeah.
And so the guy came up and stopped here where I'm at, and brought in a bunch of pictures, and I signed them for him, and you know, for him to take to some conventions and sell, and we paid pretty decent. But as far as getting out and no, I hadn't really, like I said, I did that one in August of 2019, and then a month and a half later is when that stroke hit me, and I just you know, I want to go and see some of my old buddies and stuff, you know.
I was gonna ask if you missed it. Do you miss getting out there and seeing, you know, your coworkers, your friends, the fans?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I really do. And I might, you know, if one comes up that I can see that would be easier, you know, easy for me to make and
sure
and everything, but
yeah,
it's just, I mean, I do pretty good for the condition I'm in as far as, you know, just dressing. I mean, it's hard when you only got one hand and really
sure
one and a half leg, you know.
Yeah,
it's just, it's so much. And when I ride in a car, I'm used to sitting still so much because I got a power chair or wheelchair. And,
yeah,
you know, and I ride around that thing and stuff. But for the most part, I just sit kind of still or lay here in the bed, watch TV and stuff. And when I get out in a car for long, I kind of get a little car sick, you know. Or,
sure, yeah.
You know, it's just, I don't know. I ain't used to weaving and stopping and going, and so it's,
yeah, I mean, it changes everything, right? I mean, it changes everything about your life. Makes things you take for granted. Things you took for granted. It makes it very difficult. And but never say never, right? We might see Joel Deaton out there if the situation were right, the travel were right. You might see Joel out there again at a convention, but. In the meantime, Joel, do you have a way for my listeners or fans of yours to follow you? Do you have anything? I mean, online, social media presence?
I'm on Facebook, and I got, you know, all tons of memorabilia that is over in the apartment. Well, it's like a house that my folks had behind their house that when I came off the road, that I kind of came back here to be around them and help them. And and so I keep all my memorabilia stuff is over there. And I need to get over there and organize it because I have a lot of it. And
Yeah.
You know, some rare stuff.
It'd be nice. Yeah, nice to, you know, if you're able sometimes, right, take some pictures of that, post it up, and fans would love to see some. I mean, I'm sure you've got all kinds of great stuff. And,
man, I bet you I got 1,000 pictures over there from all.
I imagine.
Everywhere I went, I took pictures, you know, and all the tours and all places in Japan. And we went everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Hiroshima,
that's great.
Nagasaki, Okinawa. We went all over the place. And
that'd be so great to see some of those, right? Such a slice of wrestling history there to see what you got. So
it really is. And I'm going to get over there. The only trouble is it's like a garage apartment over there, and it's like 15 steps to get up to where the apartment is. This is a garage apartment over the top of the garage. I can do it, but it'd be hard, but I could get up there and do it. And I'm going to get over there and get that. I've been meaning to do it for a long time, but I just, my mom's 93, and she stays over there in the house by herself. And
93?
Drive
wow. Yeah. She keeps Joel in her place, huh? Keeps you straight.
She's a tough old bird.
I bet. 90. Yeah, make it to 93. You got to be, right? You got to have some fight. Still driving at 93. That's crazy.
I can drive, but I don't like to, but I can, but I haven't in a while, but I did there for a little while, and I just said, I just would quit altogether driving.
Yeah. Well, everybody, look up Joel on Facebook and give him a follow on whatever else, because you never know when he might pop up with some pictures of wrestling history. You never know.
I used to put some on there every week.
Sure.
And
well,
if you go to my page and scroll down far enough, you'll see some of them.
Sure.
I'd like to get over there and get some of that stuff and post it for people to see. I know they enjoy it. And,
sure.
And, there's a lot of stories that I could tell, from all the territories and stuff I worked in. And,
absolutely. I'd love to have you back on again. Again, today I wanted to give you a little overview of everything you did. But yeah, I'd love to have you on again sometime and just focus in on something specific, right? And talk more in depth at anyone. I mean, because you were everywhere. You worked them all, and
I worked. People don't really know, my full career. I mean, I did. I worked, I worked in Georgia. I worked Florida. I worked to Tri-State out of Tulsa. I worked for Bill Watts for a while.
Southwest, Kansas City.
I worked out there in Texas, and I worked in Puerto Rico, and worked with Crockett for 6 years, and then I worked, in Japan for,
of course, Japan,
over 10 years.
Yeah. And I definitely remember Joel Deaton, especially remember Thunderfoot. That's when I was, around that time when you were starting the Thunderfoot, that's when I was hot and heavy watching everything. And I remember Thunderfoot and, so much. And then, I thought there was going to be a big run there for Thunderfoot, but I guess things change.
It was like, Dusty, he kept me in the semi-mains and the middle matches, semi-mains with Thunderfoot. I made a little money with Thunderfoot.
Yeah, of course.
But
it's all great wrestlers have all these different personalities, right? Different runs of different things. And you go with what you need to do. And, Joel, you absolutely had a great career. And again, I just wanted to give everybody kind of an overview of some of the things you did, right? Just a little introduction to all the things you did. Like I said, I'd love to have you on again sometime in the future and talk more in depth on like something specific, not everything, but let's focus in on something. So,
yeah,
but I do, I do appreciate you giving me the time. Again, I love to talk wrestling, and I'd love to talk to you again, Joel. And I appreciate you giving me the time. And
well, Dave, listen, I appreciate you thinking about me and inviting me on the show. And I want to let all the listeners know that I appreciate all the fans that they, you know, when I, they always, you know, seem to enjoy my wrestling. And,
yeah.
And I appreciate it. I really do. And yes, I would like, I'd come on and do a part two, and I where I tell some more stories because it, you know, this is kind of a generic, you know,
yeah,
just kind of brief little just kind of let people know some of the things I did. But
yeah, I like to do that when I have a guy on first time. I like to kind of give you talk a little about everything as much as we can. But yeah,
you know, I have a lot of funny stories, you know, with people, you know, that I think they'd like. I thought about writing a book, but
that'd be great. I love books. I'm a book guy, so I'd love to see a Joel Deaton book. And we will definitely have you on more. So much I'd like to talk, you know, a little more about, especially I think the Japan stuff. That'd be fascinating because you had such a great run in Japan.
I got some really good stories from Japan.
Sure.
You know, and cool. I know things that, you know, that went on over there that people don't know.
And yeah.
I listen to these podcasts sometimes, and a lot of the people, well, not a lot, but some of the people, they tend to stretch the truth.
Sure.
And I know because I was there, you know, so yeah. I know if I was there and whoever's talking was there, I know if they're telling the truth or if they're just, you know, bullshitting or whatever. But
that's right. That's right.
But well, and Joel, I don't like that. You know, I don't like to talk bad about anybody, but there are some, you know, some people that, you know, I don't respect as much as I used to because of listening to them live. And
people deserve to be called out. But yeah, definitely, Joel. Thank you for your time. Definitely, we'll have you back. I'll have you back on. We'll talk more, probably more than once. We'll pick different things, different territories, and we'll just sit down and just tell all kinds of stories about a specific territory. And I appreciate you, Joel. So we will stay in touch, sir.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you thinking about me. And I hope all the fans enjoyed, you know, this. I got a lot more to tell, and if we get around to doing part two, I'll tell y'all some of these stories.
That's right. Well, we will definitely do that. So Joel will be back on for sure. Once again, thank you, Joel, for your time. And like I said, we'll stay in touch, and in the near future, we'll do some more and talk some more.
Sounds great, brother.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course, all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com /wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the Wrestlecopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to Joel for coming on. As you heard, Joel, back. As you know, I like to follow up a lot of these guys, right? The first time I have them on, that they had long careers with a lot going on. I like to just give an overview, give listeners just this is a basic overview of their entire careers. But then I do like to bring them back in time to time for, you know, to talk special topics, you know, matches in specific, promotions in specific, whatever it might be. But Joel will definitely be back on because he's got lots more to say and lots more to talk about. And I look forward to talking to him again. Everybody follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty and you'll find me there. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all my various podcasts. As speaking of podcasts, go check out all the shows on the Wrestlecopia Network. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platform, or you can visit Wrestlecopia.com. Also, please be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account today, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Once again, guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all your support, subscribing, all the great interactions I get on social media. It really makes me feel great. I know you guys are enjoying the articles and the clippings and everything that I post. So you know, keep that coming. I like that interaction. I like that feedback. So stick with it. And until next episode, guys, wherever you go and wherever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.